You are listening to the Rainmakers Power Hour. Join your hosts, Wendy Butler, Leanne Nguyen, and Macy Nelson, as they interview the most successful entrepreneurs from around the world who are sharing their proven strategies to help take your business to the next level.
So, Wendy, what are you wearing?
I am wearing the William and Harry golf hat, of course, our sponsor.
Me too. Crazy, wait, you too? Oh my
God. DJ Osmike, we should have sent one over to you.
Where is mine?
We got to send one to you. What in the world were we thinking? I did want to say thank you, McGenna, for coming today and being our co-host. Macy Nelson is out sick, unfortunately. So McGenna has stepped in to help us today with DJ Ice Mike. And I did, before we get started, I do want to say a thank you to our sponsors who are in the house. Ollie Bigler with Smarter Aircraft, the next generation in private jet aviation investments. And you can reach him over at smarteraircraft.com. Also, Rhett Butler, William and Harry Golf, of course. The next level in luxury brand exotic golf shoes. You can find them over at williamandharry.com. So thank you to our sponsors. McGenna, why don't you do our intro today?
What an honor. It's so amazing to be back. I love that I get to hang out with DJ Ice Mike. So let's do this officially. Welcome to Rainmakers Power Hour. We are hosts, Wendy Butler, Credit Ninja. I do not know how to pronounce her full name. Love you, Credit. And Macy Nelson interviewed top business leader from all walks of life, all industries, from all over the world with beautiful accents, right? So if you'd like to learn more where we hang out, visit rainmakerspowerhour.com. You'll learn about this social audio video app called Chatter Socials. Link probably will be at the top somewhere. If not, that website has the information, which means all the guests here and all of our friends get to interact. So I'm super excited to be with you all today. And Wendy, take it over.
I'm going to take the mic, right? Can't hear you anyway, Wendy. You're muted.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I'm going to let you take over, Credit, and do the intro.
Very good. Thank you so much, McGenna. And she is our guest co-host today on Rainmaker Power Hour, where we stream every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern, live on Chatter app. And of course, today we have a special guest, is DJ Ice Mike. And I'll give you a little backstory of how we became friends on this app and also friends in our IRL, in real life. And it's interesting how that develops. But if for those people who are, we are streaming at the same time, welcome to Rainmaker Power Hour for those people that are on X. And of course, we're going to be on YouTube, Spotify, and Bold Podcast. So I just wanted to add that part of it. Definitely, you'll get all that information inside of the YouTube channel that we have, Rainmaker Power Hour. But yeah, I want to introduce DJ Ice Mike. I met DJ a few years ago on a previous social audio app called Clubhouse, and then we became better friends. Because when you're in these different audio apps, you're in different rooms, depending on what your interest level is. I'm usually in the main rooms or in entrepreneurial rooms. And DJ Ice Mike is usually in like the arts rooms or the music rooms and all that. So we didn't interact a lot. I knew about him. He knew about me. But we actually became better acquainted and getting to know each other in real life on an app called Chatter, which is where we are streaming live. But a little background about DJ Ice Mike, some of his cred, that's what we call it, his credentials.
Ooh, that's good.
He's a DJ. He has open format events. He actually was at the event for Ludacris, which he planned at a convention here at some type of real estate. He's going to expand on that. And we actually got to hang out with DJ Ice Mike in person. We actually hung out at the DJ booth. And we were very close to Ludacris, which is an OG in the music scene. He opened for J.A. Rule.
Ja Rule.
I'm sorry. I got to pronounce that. And of course, at the Seattle Mariners, MLB, the San Francisco 49ers, that's NFL, and moving 92.5 FM in Seattle, which is a radio station. He also shares stages with Maroon 5, Lunix, Bobby Brown, Kelly Clarkson, Digital Underground, Sabrina Carpenter. Oh my God, Khaled. Oh my God, I could go on. And I know he's going to be doing stuff overseas. But at the end of the day, it was interesting to see that side of DJ Ice Mike. And of course, I want to ask you, how would you like us to address you? Because is it DJ? Is it Ice Mike? Is it the guy, the GOAT? What do you want us
to say? No, I know everybody just says it because it's my name is DJ Ice Mike. Just like they call you Credit instead of Leanne. You could just say Mike or Ice Mike or something like that. But for some reason, I don't know, it's an app thing. The people kind of twist it around and say Mike Ice or you can say Mike, it's fine. I'm good with that.
I'm going to start out. The question is, how did you get started in the DJ music world? Because I'm always fascinated of how do you get into that world? It's such a very close-knit world. You got to know somebody, even though you have really good music. How do you break in to the DJ scene? And then we're going to talk about all the things that open up channels for you in that space, whether it's a hobby or is it relationship building? Because we do talk about that on this app quite a bit, is
right.
How do you build authentic relationships?
First of all, I want to thank you. Thank everybody for having me. Thank you, lovely ladies and sponsors. Thank you for sponsoring. What's up, Chatter? And what's up, X? Is it Spaces? It's called Spaces? Yeah. I'm not too much on Spaces, so I don't know. So what's up? Follow me, DJIceMike.com. I'm just kidding. Anyways, how I got started was I came from a generation of DJ. My uncles and cousins were all in the music business, meaning like bands, DJs. And how I got into it, I was a little kid and my cousin would always play in a band and my uncle would play in a band and they would travel all over the Bay Area. And so when they had intermission, my cousin would go and DJ and stuff like that. So I started doing it. And then my other cousins kind of follow suit. So we have a whole family of DJs. And I started off just in the Bay Area where there's a lot of battle DJs. So I started in the battle scene where it's all cutting, scratching, beat juggling, stuff like that. Stuff I still do every once in a while, but they took it to a whole different level. I can't even keep up anymore with the kids. But I did that. I traveled around battling, doing DJ battles and performances all over the Bay. I moved to Guam. That's where my family is from. It's a small island in the Pacific. And I took my talents there. And this is back in like the late 80s, early 90s when the records weren't available, readily available. So I had an advantage. I had some records. I had, you know, skill things. So I was battling people all over Guam. And then since Guam's proximity is so close to Asia, I would go to Japan quite a bit. I would go to DJ and battle Taiwan, China, Philippines quite a bit, Malaysia, all over, even Australia, just to DJ and just to battle and represent, because Guam is a territory of the U.S. And so they would say, they would always advertise Guam or USA's best DJ. So everybody wanted to beat me in Asia and stuff. And so it was really fun. The bad thing is that I traveled to all those places and all I was focused on was DJing. I didn't get to enjoy the environment. I remember turning down scuba diving at the Great Barrier Reef. I ended up snorkeling, but just things like that I didn't really discover because I was so ultra focused on DJing. It was my life. Music was my life. And that's kind of how I got started. And just every once in a while, I'll semi-retire every once here and there, but then it just calls me back because this is my zen. This is what I do. It's not necessarily a hobby. It's a passion. It's really a passion of mine. I love doing this. And I'll keep doing this. I don't care if I'm 75, 80. I believe I'll still keep doing this.
Now, do you feel that with DJing, does it keep you young and active and in the know? What's the thing? Because you got to keep moving, keep staying relevant. How's that?
You do. Although I do keep up with some of the new stuff, but mostly I have to go with what I really know. It's like the old school, the 90s hip hop, R&B, you know, and house music and techno. And then the early 2000s, those are like kind of my forte. Those are the things I love doing. I can still rock some of the newer music out there. But there's just so much genres out there and so many subgenres of subgenres of subgenres that it's very hard to keep up every once in a while. But it does give me, for lack of a better word, some clout to some of the younger people that see me and know that I can still rock a younger crowd, but then also rock a little bit older. I can perform for you. I can perform for your parents and maybe your grandparents. But that's the diversity, because I come from a time when it was open format. You play everything. You know, that was the time, you know, you weren't just specialized in house music, specialized in country music, specialized in, and I get it because you can make a living doing that. But I have too much of a like ADHD to play one style, one genre, one type of music. So I love the open format. I'll just mix it up, really.
I have to jump in here real quick. I saw the photos of you with massive crowds in the background. I'm assuming that was Lollapalooza or I know you did USA and Sweden. And I have massive stage fright, as most of my close friends know. I have to do a lot of public speaking, which is it's a chore for me because I just I have the jitters so badly. Tell me about Lollapalooza and being in front. Do you thrive on this energy? Tell us all about it.
Well, what's crazy is that wasn't like the biggest crowd I've done. Probably the biggest crowd is typically, it was probably in Japan when I was battling, and there was probably 20 to 20, this is before they had festivals. They would just come out and just see their DJs, you know, representing countries and stuff. So it would have to be in about 30,000 to 35,000 people. Lollapalooza at that time, because I was an early performer, was probably about 25,000 people. And the thing is that I'm nervous all the way up until I'm ready to go. Once I start, I do my intro, then I lock in and I'm in the zone. I'm in like a crazy zone where I see and I hear everything and I notice and I can still read the crowd and everything, but I'm just locked in. Like people can talk to me and I may respond to them. I don't know if I'm responding correctly to them, but I am so locked in. Credit saw me when I was at Zouk opening for Ludacris that I was just in a zone. And that's how I'm able to do because I'm naturally an introvert. It's very hard to believe that, but I'm more of an ambivert where I can turn it on when I need to, but it exhausts me. It completely exhausts me. I didn't get a degree in accounting because I wanted to be out in front. I got it because I wanted to be in the office, in the background, and just not do it. I didn't start talking on the mic when I was DJing till probably early 2000s. I never wanted to go on the microphone. I never wanted to be in front of people. I just wanted to DJ and that's it. But when I came back to the States from Guam, to hire MCs, it cost a lot more money. So I was like, I'm just going to learn how to do it myself. And the industry that I'm in forced me to do that, being in a multifamily industry, real estate, and then also have to managing thousands of people. I've had to learn how to overcome that fear. And it's helped me in the DJ business because now I can be the personality I want to. I can turn on Ice Mic if I want to. I can turn on mic as a boss and speak in front of tens of thousands of people about the multifamily industry or the DJ industry. And DJing, both of them kind of went hand in hand because it taught me to be a little bit more outgoing and to communicate and to network a little bit better than I imagined.
I have a question. Why DJ Eyes? Where does the Eyes come from?
The Ice Mic was back in the breakdance days. And my cousin, I was like one of the youngest ones to battle to DJ, not DJ, but breakdance battle. And I would do a lot of these combos. I was very athletic, flips and stuff like that. So my cousin just said, man, you're just smooth as ice. And then so he said, I'm going to call you Ice Mic. And then it's just kind of carried on all the way through. And then so it's the same thing because he was my DJ partner for a long time. We would battle together. And so he just said, you know, you just keep Ice Mic because you're still smooth as hell. So cold as hell, but smooth as ice. That's what he said. So I just kept that. And that's been the name. I've had a battle for that name, like throughout like my career. There's other people that's called Ice Mic. And when the internet started coming around, people were like claiming Ice Mic and all that stuff. And so in the DJ world, we would say, okay, if you really want the name, this battle for it. So we would virtual battle and things like that. And some of them I won, some of them I lost only because I think the crowd was a little slanted. It was slanted to them because they had way more followers than I did. Even though the judges said that, hey, I think the skill-wise you won, but crowd participation, he kind of blew you out of the water. And that's how I had to start, you know, really marketing myself. That's where I kind of discovered. I knew marketing with the multifamily, but marketing as a DJ, and this is the beginning of the internet or the social media phase with the MySpace. I didn't do anything on MySpace, but then Facebook came out and I was like, I got to do something. I need to claim my name. And then Instagram and everything. And it was just, it was just tough to be able to maintain that skill level as the industry evolved. The DJ industry from vinyl to CDs to MP3s to streaming right now. So
I had to keep you up. Sound like you're very old, but you're so young because you're like going back into Elsa, who's in the space with us today. Shout out to Elsa Lopresti.
She's a young DJ in the audience. I'm sure we're going to talk to her.
It's awesome. Hey, Elsa.
Thanks for sharing, DJ. That's awesome. Smooth as ice. Now, I'll never forget.
That's awesome. I have to know, you've worked with some of the best in the industry, Maroon 5, Kelly Clarkson, so many others. Who has been your favorite? Who did you love working with and are dying to get back to do another show with?
The very first person I've opened up for was, I was in Guam, and it was Bobby Brown. And this is, yeah, young Bobby Brown can dance and everything. Right now, he's a little out of shape right now, but Bobby Brown was probably the thing is that you know, when I found out I was gonna open, and you had to like audition, and basically it was a battle to open up for him. And so I won the battle and everything. And so that was the local producer. And this is the first time I've ever had to open up for somebody. And I think it was about 10,000 people. And I did, and it was a 2-day concert because they couldn't, you know, more people wanted, you know, that was the biggest stadium we had at the time. And so I prepared like weeks for my set. I was like, I'm just going to totally impress Bobby Brown and everybody and represent my country. I did it. I felt I killed that set. I did my thing and everything. And then the evening or the next morning, they said, hey, we're not going to have you back, but thank you for performing. I was like, what the hell? It crushed me. I was like, what do I do? He goes, well, you know, they say that you did too good. And I was like, what do you mean? He goes, they have a DJ. Bobby Brown has a DJ and he does his opening act. And it was very tough for him to follow that because one, you played a lot of the same songs. Two, you were doing stuff that he couldn't do. And it taught me one of the biggest lessons. I have to go, if I'm going to open up for a DJ, an artist, or if an artist has a DJ, to always check on them. What songs, get to know the DJ, get to know the stage manager. What songs can I not play? What songs could I play? What song do I hype it up? You know, can I talk on the mic, do all that stuff? Because that's how the energy needs to be. It needs to, like, I open up, then it goes up and it goes another notch and another notch. When I've opened up for Maroon 5 and all those guys, they bring my volume down. And I didn't realize that. You'll realize a lot of opening acts, they keep it down. And then when the main act comes, it's like, boom, in your face. And that's for a purpose. And it took me a while to understand that. And so working with other, opening up for other artists, now I'm very cognizant about things like that. And then so their DJ or their stage managers appreciate that. So, hey, we have another friend or another artist, another stage manager that says, hey, here's a guy that does really well with the opening set. He's not over the top, but he'll still get the crowd going and having fun and things like that. And he checks on the DJs too. So I think I expanded a little bit on that, but I think the Bobby Brown thing, because I was a huge fan of New Edition and everything, and he just put on a great show. And then I got to close after that too. So his show. So that was probably the most favorite, because that was the first time I have had that much energy and on the island. Because you're a local DJ, but to be a local DJ on that type of stage, that you make a good name for yourself, because it's a very small island. But I do have to say that Ja Rule last year blew my mind away. He completely blew. His set was amazing. And everybody knows the beef between him and 50 and then Fyre Festival and stuff like that, the debacle. And he addressed all that in a little video montage before he went on. And then when he came out, man, that energy was so hype. And that was the first show or concert that I produced. Because otherwise, before that, it was all they would hire me. My booking agent would hire me to play wherever I needed to play. But this was the first one I actually produced from scratch. And the second one was, of course, Ludacris, and it was even bigger. And Ludacris was fun, too, but he was like 30 or 40 minutes late. So my set was always, I have a backup set, but I had that main set. And then that was going to be the outro, and then boom. But then he kind of threw it off. So I had to, being a professional, you have to learn how to deal with adversity, though. So it turned out really great.
I love that. You were there, weren't you? You were at Ludacris.
I was there. Yeah, Lauren was there. We also had Katie was there.
and who else was there? Dez was there.
Yeah, a few of them.
We were there pretty much the whole time. Mama K was there. She made it. And
seriously, that's awesome. You had a huge chatter community to join.
They were right behind me too. They were right on the side behind me. I made sure they had VIP service and everything.
Yeah, we had to fight off all the people that wanted to climb up. So that was kind of fun.
You can't be near him. You got to do his thing.
But no, credit, it's all VIP for him. Credit. Oh. You can nothing less. I was like, okay, we have bottle service. We have all this. Okay, she's set. She's good.
Yeah, it was fun. And we had an opportunity to hang out at my suite at Resorts World, spending time with people at these events. So let me ask you a question. You touch upon your turning on the multifamily world and the DJ world and integrating it all. Mm-hmm. I know that for this particular event that took place in Vegas and you opened for Ludacris, it was for some type of a real estate event. Can you give me an idea of what the event was and what was your role in that? And how were you able to jump into not only the DJ role, but also the convention that took place?
The convention is the National Apartment Association. So it's their annual. It's one of the largest ones. I believe they had about 15,000 people up there. It's just for multifamily property owners, operators, vendors, and things like that service that industry. And so I've been performing at that event for 12 years. And it was always with another band. Like I would be like special guest DJ with a band, another band that and we played at, it was amazing because they invited me when they found out that I was DJ. Because I can go back to the story where I never mixed the two. I never mixed the multifamily. I just wanted to be incognito. And because I felt, I don't know why I felt this. I felt that they would not look at me as a professional. Like they, you know, it was a hobby, you know, and this is back in early 2000s. Where the DJ profession was still looked at as a younger profession, you know, not necessarily respected. It wasn't until like Tiesto and David Guetta and all those guys, when they started making $1 million a year back in, you know, early 2000s is when that profession, we started getting a little bit more respected. And so they wanted to get a DJ and everything. And going back the year before, they had a DJ that wasn't really good that was doing their intermissions. And, you know, I just being in the industry, somebody said, hey, you know, Mike DJs, you should have him do it since he's in the industry. And so I did it the first time, this House of Blues in San Diego. My first time I was DJing there. House of Blues is an iconic place. All the House of Blues are iconic. And I started building my resume in that industry, that I was an industry DJ, but still nobody really knew whether I was in the industry or not. And as I was doing that, I started moving up in the, I was working for Graystar at the time, one of the largest multifamily companies in the nation, probably in the world, to be honest with you. And so I started moving up from community manager to like a regional manager, senior regional, then a director and senior director. I started phasing away from DJing as I was moving up. And what happened is that the show started getting bigger and bigger. We did the Fillmore in Denver, which was about 8,000 people. I did the Fillmore in San Francisco, another about 3,000 or 4,000 people. House of Blues in Chicago, and then Tabernacle in Atlanta. Iconic places where a lot of DJs have not played. I don't know a lot of DJs have played at the Wolf. The Fillmore it's a very iconic place. A lot of bands have come through there, but not a lot of DJs. And so I started performing more. My sets were longer because people were coming to see me just as much as they were going to see the band. And so it just gotten bigger and bigger. And then when they bring in artists to perform at these events, they would say, okay, let's get Ice Mike. You know, he can do it. He's in the industry and that's a good draw. So that's how that kind of mixed intertwined because we just started doing bigger and bigger events. The conferences got bigger and bigger. And then I was asked to speak at a few of them, not just about DJing, but it was about just my rise up from being a community director, on-site person to executive. And that's how I mirrored it. Again, as I grew in my position, I had a boss. It's a funny story. I had a boss that said, you know, we were drinking, hanging out. And he's like, well, what do you want to do? You want to DJ or do you want to do real estate, multifamily real estate? And I said, I want to do multifamily because I saw the thing, but I was like, why can't I DJ too? He goes, well, people aren't going to take you serious. Yeah, if you DJ. And I was like, man, that sucks. And so it took, so I started, I basically kind of retired. I was still doing small parties here and there, but I wasn't doing big events except for the conference. And then I did a charity, a big charity for a client of mine in Beverly Hills. And he had, I don't know if I put that on it, but that's when I opened up for Common. And Russell Simmons is there. I know there's a lot of controversy about Russell Simmons now, but back then there wasn't. And I knew he was going to be in the crowd, and me being trying to prepare for a lot of things, I made sure I did a lot of Def Jam mixes. I threw in all the old school, new school Def Jam, knowing that Russell Simmons was in there because he's one of the pioneers of hip hop and rap. And so I opened up, you know, my client was a really nice guy. He's, you know, he's been my client for 23 years. So I think I'm in the will, I'm in his will, but anyways, I went to the back because the entertainers were back there. We couldn't really go and mingle with anybody. So I was there eating and stuff like that. And Russell Simmons came into that back area and he said, "I've been looking for you, man. That was a dope set. I know you saw me and I saw you see me," and stuff like this. So he sits down while I'm eating and we just chop it up for like a good hour. People are kept coming in and saying, "Hey, Russell, there's people want to meet you." But he goes, "I'm talking to the DJ Ice Mike." And so he just hung out and talked to me. And I told him, I said, "Yeah, I love DJing, but I'm gonna focus more on real estate." And he's like, "Who told you you can't do both?" I was like, "Well, it's just, you know, I didn't want to call my boss out because he was there." So I said, just some of the executives were thinking, "Hey, they may not take me serious." And he goes, "You got to be kidding me. These fools are going around in their plaid golf pants and everything and playing golf and they're bad. And you can't DJ? No, you're going to go DJ because this is too good for you not to bless people's ears with. You have a gift. You have a talent. I guarantee you they're not going to look down on you as long as it doesn't affect your 9-to-5, what your main is." And so I took that and just ran with it. And that was about seven, eight years ago. And I still good friends with my old boss. And I keep sending him, "Hey, I just opened up for this person. Hey, I just opened for this person. Hey, I just opened up for this person." And he's like, "Man, I'm so proud of you. You know what I said? I just didn't understand. I didn't understand that was your passion, that you really wanted to do this." And I said, "Yep, I did." And it's just been amazing ever since. It was amazing back then, but the level of gigs, the gigs that I've been getting at my age is crazy. It's crazy. And some of it is attributed to Clubhouse, getting to know people. I always DJed within the US and maybe like part of Asia or the Pacific Islands, but I never DJed in Europe. And so when the pandemic hit, I was like, "Okay, now is a good time for me to retire. I'll just focus on all my assets I have and just live off of that and just call it good. Early retirement, just have fun." And then Clubhouse game. And then broke out the turntables again, started DJing. And for some reason, people love listening to it. You know, even if I'm messing around, because, you know, my ADHD mixing is what everybody likes. Not everybody wants to hear the same type of music for hours. And so I started meeting a lot of people. And once the pandemic, once everything kind of opened, I was getting booked all over the US. And then I went to Europe. I went to Sweden. I DJed in Sweden. DJed in Estonia, DJed in Barcelona. So these are kind of gigs that I would have never had if I didn't connect with people on social audio. So that's what I contributed to. That's why I love this. I was so sad when Clubhouse changed that whole thing, but I was very happy to see Chatter come about and then add the video element, which is amazing because now you can see me actually doing what I'm doing, but rather than just kind of hearing it. So I love it.
Go ahead, Megan, and then Wendy has a question about what we're talking about. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. Well, I have so many questions, but I won't ask them all, I promise.
All right.
No, I won't, but I love asking questions about definition of success, right, when I meet friends and people, but I believe I have already defined what success means to Mike because I hear you speak and then I feel your energy. And I love how humble you are. And I honestly, when you said, "Oh, it's crazy that I get booked." Meanwhile, I'm thinking, no, it's not crazy. That's what's supposed to happen because you align with everyone's energy. And I am a consumer of your art because we connected on Clubhouse, but here on Chatter Social, it's 2 a.m. You find that Albanian music and you won't give up until you play the right remix that makes me happy at 2 a.m. Mama K walks in, you shut her out. Wendy comes in, yay. And then we have our own custom songs. When I enter the room, my song is Migna. When Holiday walks in, we greet her with a Holiday song. I'm like, who is this guy? So I won't even ask you about definition of success. But what I would like to know, Mike, is what is one thing you wish people in general knew more about a life of a DJ? Like when you're behind closed doors. Because we know the fun side, but what is the one secret you can share? Not just about you, but that world as a whole.
The one, I don't know if it's just one, if it's one secret, but it's tough. It's tough to be a DJ these days because I'm only speaking now because I see where it's headed with AI and everything and people just, you know, saying the DJs, but they're not DJs. I want to keep the art alive. The one thing I want to make sure is keep that art alive. Don't always rely on AI. Understand the skills set that goes into it. There's so many things there. We multitask, DJs multitask like crazy. We're thinking in a matter of seconds and sometimes minutes, we have to think about what song is going to blend in. Is the BPM good? Does it sonically sound good? So is the key right? Is the energy right? Is the crowd going to like it? Are you vibing with it? Is the club owner going to be good? Is the bar, are we going to make enough at the bar? Because if you're playing all bangers and everybody's DJing, then nobody's buying drinks. And so there's times, and most really good DJs know this, that it's okay to clear the dance floor sometimes. Because if you're in a club or an industry that relies on the bar or the entrance fees and stuff like that, mostly it's the bar. The entrance fee is just, that's like a tip. But it's really the bar. You got to understand the expectations. A lot of the younger DJs come in and just do their set and they're gone. Or they have a preset, and they're not going to deviate from that. I love getting requests and people challenging me. On this app, I believe it was Rico the Villain. He's like, I'm going to challenge you. I'm going to give you all kinds of songs and you just got to keep mixing it. And this guy went every genre, every generation, and every slow jams to a fast jam. And that's the kind of thing that keeps me going, you know, keeps me relevant with some of the kids and everything, because a lot of DJs just don't take requests. And there's times when I don't take requests if I'm doing like a festival or something like that. But it's just being able to be flexible, multitask, don't stress. The technology can help, it can help you and save you, but don't rely too much on it. Sometimes it's that instinct, that feel, that thing that you gotta be able to read the crowd and not always playing things that you want to hear, but what they want to hear. But not only that, play what they didn't know they wanted to hear. That's the skill of it. When you're really DJing, you gotta really take in everything about it, about the crowd, everything. And it's tough. A lot of times it could be really stressful, but if you know what you're doing, you have the experience, you have the ability to make changes on the fly. I make changes all the time. Even though I know it's something that I want to play, but I feel like the crowd would like it better if I play this other one. You know what I mean? Peace. What are you doing? I'm throwing gang signs?
I was giving you balloons.
I forgot about those things.
For those of you on YouTube and you can do all these hand gestures and it creates all this fun stuff. I mean, awesome. Switching gears just a little bit, I do want to get back in touch on your multifamily. What I loved about what you were saying was that COVID hit and things were slowing down. So you just had your multifamily and you were just going to rest on that. For the most part, a lot of people were in a panic at that time. Had you been preparing this? I know you started working as in your early days as a property manager. I guess you had a degree in accounting. Tell us how you went into building that portfolio and how you were able to relax during COVID when others were so stressed out.
I think what the key to this with a anybody that owns multifamily or manages multifamily is getting quality renters. A lot of times we panic, like you say, to fill in the vacancies. And I've gone through those phases because you know, mortgages due, you have a lot of vacancy, you got investors and everything. But it starts with quality clientele. You know, a lot of times, you know, there's certain fact criteria to rent. So it was one of the biggest ones is, of course, credit. Credit is a big one, but not only that, is your ability to pay. 3.5 times the amount of rent you have to earn. And sometimes when we're in a pickle, we sacrifice some of that. The credit is really bad. They show signs of that they're not going to pay. And you still get them because you want heads on beds. And you get caught up in that, the heads on beds, but you're not thinking about the bad debt, the delinquencies, and the stress that the team has to go and collect, the attorney fees, all these things. So it starts from the beginning and making sure you pre-qualify them well in advance. And that's what we did. When I say we, it's my family. I have my own personal assets, but also my family has a pretty good portfolio. And so I didn't learn that until probably maybe 6 or 7 years after I first started in multifamily real estate. And that was during the economic housing crash, 2008, 2009. And so we just had people just not paying rent, just simply not paying rent because they couldn't afford it because they lost their house. You know, in some cases, you know, they were overextended and everything. And I just, while it still benefited, because that's when we invested most of our money into new assets at that time, our existing assets. And then when I was working, we had just our occupancy went down drastically. And so I vowed since then that I'm going to make sure that we're going to have quality clientele, people that can pay their rent. And it shows a history of it. And so by the time the pandemic hit, that philosophy helped because there was nobody that did not pay rent. You know, throughout the, and this is, you're talking about almost four, at that time we were at about 4,000 units. And so people were paying rent and we took care of them. My mom she was the brains of everything. And we have that island style, that the hospitality of the islands. She'll go there and cook them food, bring them, thank you for paying rent. Here's like a meal for your family, stuff like that. That hospitality, that island hospitality just will help people. And everybody goes through stuff on their lives and stuff. And my mom and myself, more my mom than me, but she'd feel sorry and say, okay, I'll give you a month free, or you can pay it afterwards if you move out or something like that. Or if you move out, I'll get you another unit that you can afford. She was coming up with ideas to where we could still help them, but still not lose money. And so they were so grateful. A lot of them were so grateful, especially the pandemic. We were like, hey, if you can't pay, you know, that's okay. We'll do a kind of a payment plan. And so I just took that on. And when you treat them right, they'll treat you right. It's harder to say to leave a friend than it is a stranger or somebody that you've crossed or didn't have any sensitivity to. There was a lot of people that just were not empathetic to what was happening during the pandemic. And a lot of the clients, my clients, because they weren't, even though my recommendation, because I still consult with them, was to just be a little bit more flexible. And they're like, well, we're not a bank, you know, this. And then what happens? They drop their vacancy is too high. They drop it. And then the valuation of your asset is based off your GPR. And that's what happened. And so that's how I was able to do it. And then the DJing part, because the DJing part, although I wasn't like doing gigs during the pandemic, I was still getting paid. People were sending me money, Cash App, things like that. And all of that went to charity. Everything I vowed to say, everything that came from like social audio, including Chatter, anything that I get, it all goes to charity. It goes to my son's autism, Washington Autism Alliance here in Seattle. But that's where I donate most of it to them. And so that's basically how that kind of works out.
Wow. So I had no idea that all that was going to charity. That is really amazing. You've been so interesting. You obviously have so much going on between your multifamily, DJing around the world. I do want to give some time to our audience to open it up to the audience for some questions. Does anybody in the audience have something they would like to ask the famous DJ Ice Mike?
The infamous. Go ahead.
in a moment.
Oh, I see.
Rhett's trying to get to his.
I see Ange down there. Sora's in there.
I can't see some of the hands. Sometimes that happens on here. But anyway, if you have a question, just open your mic.
I can't see the chat. For some reason, the chat's not working for me.
So my question is it much different being a superstar DJ than being like a superstar singer?
I've never been a superstar singer, so I honestly don't know. But the energy, the crowd and the energy, the response that you get, the feel, I can imagine that's what the singers feel too, if they have a good following. I think the difference is that we can play all songs and get that same reaction versus just us one or two songs or maybe six or seven songs that a singer can do that can get that reaction. Because that's what I kind of feel. Because then a lot of times singers will, there's a little bit of a lull or maybe a song that some people don't know. But with the DJs, if you're a good DJ, you're playing all songs that will just create some kind of response from your audience. And that's, I feel, when people are like screaming and saying, oh, or singing to the song, I can imagine that's how it would feel.
Do you really get into the songs when you're playing them, or are you just playing for what? Obviously, you play to your particular audience, but you go and predetermine based off the artist that you're representing, or is this just something that you feel from what you request? I've been around a lot of these DJs, and they seem so kind of laid back, and then they get so into what's going on, where the singers, they only sing their songs, they don't sing other people's songs. I'm just curious, how do you pick and choose if people aren't giving you the genre or whatever that you want?
A lot of it is just research. You research, like if I'm going to, like at the end of this month, I'm going to Estonia for a music festival. So what I do is I'll just research what's the favorite songs, what style, and then remix it. I never want to just play the song. I'll play, even if it's like a folk song, there's a couple, and this is the last time I was in Estonia, I took one of their folk songs and made it more of a hip hop, and people just went crazy for that. Which is great. Sometimes they may take it as an insult to you. So you just got to be careful. No, that's how reading the crowd sometimes is. You just got to see how they're vibing. If you're so locked in that you're not checking what the crowd is doing, sometimes it can go good or it can go really bad. But the good thing is if you can pivot, you got to learn how to pivot. I do this in multifamily all the time. You got to pivot. You got to be proactive instead of reactive. If you feel in that. And that's why I'll just change a song. Like I'll have a song set for that one because I know it mixes well into it. But if it's not the right energy, then I'm going to change it. And sometimes we, as DJs, tend to overthink things. And so we have to mix everything. Sometimes I'll just cut it in and people will get that same reaction. But I'm pretty hype behind the credits. I'm jumping around with everybody, singing along with them and everything. So I'm pretty active when I'm DJing, especially if I'm getting into it. So I don't have a problem with the energy level sometimes, but sometimes it just takes a little to get you started though.
That's cool.
Thanks.
Any other questions? Anyone want to jump in? Otherwise, I'm going to take the mic.
Hi. Is it okay if I say something?
Please.
Hi, Ange.
I'm Ange. You know what? I've loved this interview with Mikey. I'm lucky enough to call him friend, family, and have worked with him and still do. But, you know, he had a radio or, yeah, radio.
We had a radio.
Okay,
show.
I was his sidekick. I don't know. I loved how you said how he's humble, and I noticed he didn't mention it, but he's so good at sharing his stage. Like you said, he's going to be in Estonia soon, not only DJing on his own stage, also being there for his own artist, Sandra, and for my artist, Sora, like taking him along, sharing the stage with them. But during the show, like DJ Ice Mike elevates and highlights the independent artist, which I know a lot of you have now gotten to know some of the independent artists and the way that he highlights them. And just, you know, he does this thing where I know how hard he works and how busy he is. And sometimes he's just dead exhausted, but he still does it. And it's like constantly giving of himself. So like, I hear him talk about the real estate, and even just hearing it again today, I'm like, geez, man, this man, he does so much. So I guess more than a question, it's just like big upping you, because you know that I love you. And I love that you are, you get this recognition. So ladies, on my part, on his artist part, on my artist part, thank you. And on the independent artist part, thank you, because I see so many of them rise, and a lot of them are known now because of DJ Ice Mike. You know, I love you.
I love you too. Anne is one of my best friends. She's just family. She has my heart. We met on Clubhouse, and we decided to do a show, a radio show, and we highlighted. Thank you, Anne, for saying that. I appreciate you. But someone I didn't even put on my EBK, but I fell back in love with music and wanted to DJ because I heard some of these independent artists on Clubhouse. And I was like, man, I have never known about independent artists. I always thought it was just grunge music or acoustic music when they say indie music. Independent artists needed a platform to have their music heard, and Clubhouse was perfect for that. And once I started hearing, you know, some of the music, I was like, wow, some of this music is way better than some of the stuff that's out here. And I just, you know, I was like, my way of giving back to music, because music has given me a lot. It's helped propel me. It's gotten me out of a lot of issues like depression and things like that, especially finding out your son was autistic. So I had to rely on music to really get my mind straight. And I do that now. If I have a stressful time, we just closed on a huge property. It was a $110 million deal that we've had for several years. And we would have never thought we would have got this money. But for 6 months, I'm doing broker's tours, doing performers, wining and dining, doing the whole thing, calling all my clients. I'm like, you need this property and stuff like that. And it was very stressful. But I can come, and it closed. I mean, after 6-7 months, it closed for more than ask, which is really amazing. And I can just come home, DJ for like 4 hours straight and just be fine. Just be fine. Because everything that I'm doing is just, I just realize, hey, it could be worse. Your life could be worse. Your day could be worse, you know? And I play a lot of independent artist music because I feel their struggle. This is my way of giving back. And credit, you saw Sandra perform. That was my artist. I discovered her on Clubhouse. I loved one of her songs. Actually, it was my son who's autistic. He kept playing the song over and over again. And I was like, okay, son, next time, because he does that. It's repetitive. And so I was like, okay, I'm just going to listen to it. And I was like, wow, this is a banger. This song needs to be out. People need to hear this song. And so I went to one of the Clubhouse rooms where all the music execs, the true music execs, or Alan Molina, these legends, guys that I've known about in the music industry for a long time. Here I am getting to talk to them and then introducing them to a song. And they're like, hey, if we don't like it, we're going to kick you out. We're going to kick you out of the room. And everything. And I was like, okay, I'm a DJ. I should know what a hit sounds like. And they're like, okay, fine. I played it. They loved it. They absolutely loved it. They're just saying, oh, they kept bringing other music, like record labels and music execs into the room. And the artist is there. I don't represent her or anything. She was just a good friend that I found in Clubhouse, one of the rooms. And she was like mortified. Why are you playing his song and everything? But everybody loved it. And so I was like, okay, there you go. My bird dogging is done. Here, I brought you to water. Now it's up to you to drink. And so they said to take it off all the platforms and re-release it. And I was like, you're okay. You're on your own. And so about 3 or 4 months later, I checked back in with her. I say, hey, how's it going? Everybody was trying to sign you and do all this. And she was just kind of disheveled and says, you know, the music industry is not what I thought. They either want your money, your music, or as a female, it's tough. And so I was like, well, what do you need? What do you need to? I never thought I would invest into the music industry ever, because I know my lane besides DJing, but I know my lane. And so she told me the cost and everything. And I was like, okay, I'll invest in you. So I gave her some money and everything to take it off the platforms, re-release it, redo her image and everything. We threw a huge release party. One of my good clients has a beautiful apartment community with a nice rooftop deck in LA. He lent that to us for free and everything. And we had a lot of the music execs there too and everything, and released it. And from then on, it was And that was what, three, and was that 3.5 years ago? Something like that, 4 years ago.
Yeah, four.
And so we just been partners, and her way to pay me back was just giving me some of her music publishing. So now I can just go to like my, especially my clients, because they love that music industry. So I was like, hey, I own some music. You guys don't own a music, any songs and stuff like that. So they started investing in her too as well. And then she started touring with me basically. Any performance I would have, she would be part of it. And then Sora, who's in the crowd, amazing independent artist, you know, he's from the UK. So we finally connected in LA. We performed together in LA. I don't know if you guys know Parisa. It was for her birthday, Parisa Rose. And then we performed together in Vegas because I'm an event DJ for the 49ers. And that's when the 49ers went to the Super Bowl. We got to perform there together, both artists. And then last year, Ja Rule, we brought in Sora from the UK and then Sandra. And then another independent artist from the Bay Area. And so now her career is kicking off a little bit more because of that exposure. Exposure that they would probably have never gotten because it's so hard for the independent artist. And I'm sorry for kind of with the side conversation, but it's important, you know, that there's a lot of independent artists, even on this app, that we should support. And I'm trying to bring out more to come out and have you listen to a lot of their music. But some of you, I've had listening sessions where you've heard some of their music, and it's been amazing. So I appreciate Ange bringing that up. And the radio show was great because it was a radio show and clubhouse show. We brought in thousands of listeners because I would mix the independent artist music with mainstream music. So I would, and you guys, some of you guys heard me mix. They won't even know it's a mix or even know it's an independent artist until the end of the song. And I would be like, okay, the artist. And then I'll do a little interview with the artist and put them a light on them so they can talk about the music, how to support them. And that was the entire show for a long time on Clubhouse until Clubhouse screwed everything up and changed their whole format. So this chatter is going to be a great platform because now they can have visuals. They can talk because I think it resonates more when you see people face to face. So thank you guys for letting me
100%. You know, and
talk about that.
Yeah, 100%. And a star is born multiple times due to DJ Ice Mike and other DJs that are playing the songs around the world. And that we have our favorite DJs, whether it be on streaming apps, radio, whatever. But that is amazing that you're getting other people started in their careers. I do want to point out we are about a quarter after, and we don't want to take up too much more of your time. Does anybody else have any questions before we let DJ Ice Mike get back to it?
What up, Nelson? I see Nelson.
I just want to say my favorite DJ is DJ Ice.
Welcome to the room.
I sneaked him from the back door because he knows something about chatter. So I figured he could get like a free pass to this room.
Love that. Yes, he does. Now, welcome to Room and Forbes on X and YouTube. Nelson Apega is the creator of Chatter. And like I said, guys, if you are listening on Spotify, YouTube or X, you need to come over to Chatter where you can be part of our audience and you can ask our guests. We host this room every Tuesday. We've got amazing guests from entrepreneurs from around the world. I mean, look at DJ Ice Mike playing at Lollapalooza, opening for Ludacris, just sold over $100 million multifamily. Come in, guys, and you can ask your questions. But Nelson, did you have a question? Sorry to interrupt.
How can I be like Ice Mike when I grow up, man?
A lot of hard work, homie. A lot of hard work. No, but you do a good job because the music, though. I mean, even though you're more Afro beats, but you know what gets people hyped, and you got the energy to do it.
Let's go.
And we know that we want to do a shout out to Tony for sending us a rocket. Thank you so much. DJ Ice Mike, thank you for being our guest. I know you rarely do interviews. I know that about. And this means the world to us that you came in and gave us some insight of a DJ life and also integrating that into the business side of it and networking. And one of the things I could take away is really understanding how to read the crowd. And of course, music sets the mood, right? And that ability to recognize the client base for your multifamily is so important. And we want to thank everyone that has dropped into the room today, and also Megana, our co-host for today, our special co-host for today. Just want to say thank you so much. Wendy, any
other? I wanted to say I bribed Macy so I could interview DJ Ice Mike today, you guys, full disclosure, because there is no way he's getting interviewed on Chatter. And the Chatter friends are not doing the interviewing part. Call it selfish, call it selfless. Jokes aside, Macy was not feeling well. I appreciate the trust from Wendy and Credit. And literally Credit says, hey, are you available tonight? I'm like, yes. And DJ Ice Mike and I were chatting on Instagram. I'm like, I'll be there. And I'm like, oh my God, we just manifested this. Are you kidding me? And one takeaway, DJ Ice Mike, many takeaways, but when we feel that we know someone good enough based on our experiences, especially on the social audio video app, think again. You have inspired me so much, and I have chills now. And the word I have for you is like an absolute giver. Like the way you tend and you make it for the other person, you make it about the audience, you feel the energy. And that's why I said for you, there was no need for me to ask definition of success, because it shows, because you are in it, living and breathing it. And congratulations for being a superhuman.
Oh,
truly.
Appreciate that.
Congrats.
Thank you. You guys made it. One, I thank you for interviewing me. I couldn't say no because Credit would never let me say no. But I just don't. A lot of times I like to put the spotlight on other people. And that's kind of been my thing, as you can tell with fans, because I've enjoyed that spotlight. I've totally enjoyed that spotlight, and I appreciate it. Just on Chatter, I just looked on my Cash App and Venmo and stuff like that, because being an accountant, you have to know where your money's at. I've made almost $8,000 just on Chatter. $8,000 on Chatter.
Okay, wow.
Crazy. So when people talk about, I'll tell you, I mean, even the other app, I've made quite a bit of money, but not as much as, not in this short amount of time. And people talk about monetizing and stuff on these apps. There's so many ways you can monetize. There's so many. I monetize by getting gigs, networking, enjoying people, getting to know them, playing music for everybody. And that can pay off in different ways. It could be a great friendship, great connection, business, a business network or business endeavor. I've done some business with people, real estate business with people on the other app a couple times and stuff like that. And sometimes it doesn't work out, but at least, you know, you've made a connection. You've kind of realized, you know, there's certain people that maybe are not who they say they are. So you got to be careful. But the connections is just one of the best things you can ever have. I have a very tight friend pool and things like that. And most of it is my family. Being from the islands, those are your best friends. Anybody that's asked me, those are my best friends, you know. And but you find people that you just vibe with, you connect with, and then they get you a gig and they get you a gig and they get you a gig. So the money it'll come. You know, you just got to be your true self, find a little niche. I'm inviting DJs all the time onto Chatter. I'm inviting all the independent artists to come back, but they just had such a bad experience on Clubhouse that they're like, really? If it's another Clubhouse, I'm not going to do it. And there's thousands of them that want their music to be heard. They want their voices to be heard, or they want to connect with people, especially now, given the current environment of just what's been happening and everything. It's good to just have those connections and foster those relationships. And I've done that. I've met so many people from Clubhouse and then now on Chatter, a lot of people I didn't meet that I didn't know or I knew of, and Lauren, everybody, meeting them, it's just, you just have that connections. And then if you if they resonate with, you know, with you and everything, they're gonna refer you to other things. So there's so many ways to take advantage of this app. And the video part is a huge part, but the screen share is also great. You really have to utilize all of the features, because we're still doing rooms with no videos or maybe no screen shares and things like that. We just need to make it evolve. This could be a DJ's dream, to be honest with you. That's why I got to start getting, and now with the Rocket Chat, I still got to get people in here. So people.
Yeah, can you make some of the sounds? As we shout out Nelson, thank you for the Rocket Chat. And Lauren, thank you for the Rocket Chat. And Lauren again for the Rocket Chat. So thank God we have a DJ in this room. But let's do a quick picture right now. Ready? Let's smile. No closing eyes.
We're an Aaron.
Right. And our William and Harry heads. And you know what? DJ Ice Mike actually is a golfer. So let's send him a hand, will you?
Oh, yeah. I just played 36 holes yesterday. I paid 36 souls yesterday.
A pair of shoes and our custom belts.
Yeah, I do all my, honestly, I do all my business on a golf course. I do all, like, anytime my client or somebody we're selling real estate, I'm taking them on a golf course where, you know, we'll break for lunch.
Are you sure you're not AI because you're an accountant? You're a hitman? Sorry, you're not a hitman.
You're a hit maker.
I'm Albanian. I play the immigrant card. And multifamily investor, operator, DJ, we warm hearts. You are in the charity world. And you find time for us here on Chatter to make music for us and play golf.
Good for you.
Yeah, I've got a question. I have a question. Wendy.
Yes.
Was this room screen recorded? Please tell me yes.
Paul Perez is screen recording this. Yes. Please screen record everything.
Okay. All right. Call me after this. We're going to do some damage with that. But secondly, ladies and gentlemen, come on. It's 40-something people here. I only see a few rockets in that chat. I know these ladies, they got their own money. They're doing their thing. They're going crazy. But the rockets are a way of showing appreciation. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you all could kindly, if you enjoyed this room, please click the chat button. At the bottom left corner, there's a rocket icon. Throw some rockets. Light some rockets up. Ice Mike, give us a little something, something, man. Let's get them going.
Ladies and gentlemen. There we go. Shout out to Don Stuello with the first rocket.
I didn't mean to be coming out of rocket. He didn't speak to Bella. More.